Hey everybody, Solidarity House Cooperative is now on iTunes and Spotify, as well as Podbean and Patreon. You can go to Patreon to support us and any of those platforms to hear us. All right, everybody. Hey, this is Yana from Solidarity House, and I am bringing you an update on what's been happening here in Laramie, Wyoming, in response to the death of Robbie Ramirez at the hands of Sheriff's Corporal Derek Colling last fall. And so just to give everybody a smidge of the background, so Colling has now, this is his third fatal shooting while on the job, and he was also fired from the Las Vegas Police Department for basically beating the shit out of a guy who was filming the police. And so this is our charming sheriff's corporal that we have here in Laramie. And since our last story about this, the Albany County attorney, Peggy Trent, convened a grand jury, and that grand jury came back saying that there should be no charges filed against Derek Colling. And so yesterday I attended a press conference. It was my first press conference I was actually there as Solidarity Wyoming, and got to ask some questions and wanted to just give you some observations on the press conference. So the first thing is that there was some good stuff that came out of the conference that Peggy Trent had to share with us. One of them is that she's definitely acknowledging that we have no current policy around deadly force in Albany County, and that's a problem. And so she's on board with trying to figure out how things should be handled in the future. The other thing is that she did commit to releasing the body cam footage and dash cam footage, which is something that the community groups here have been asking for and that she has refused to do up until now. And she says that she is going to go ahead and release those. So I want to name those couple things that were good things that came out of it. The rest is just a bunch of kind of observations and commentary that I want to share with folks about this. One is that Peggy Trent was pretty darn defensive about her role and was kind of on the attack with community groups and biased facilitators and various other things, which basically means she's calling out ACOP, which is the community organization that is formed and that has been attempting to kind of hold folks' feet to the fire around this. And so the good news is it's clear that we have her attention and she's paying attention to what we're doing. And so that's definitely a win for the activists in town. There was also a lot of pretty condescending stuff coming out of her mouth. There was a lot of, well, you just don't understand how these things work, and a lot of kind of splaining going on. And she also kept referring to Deb Hinkle, who is Robbie Ramirez's mother, as the mother, which is just condescending and creepy. And, you know, it doesn't really pay. Let me just say that this way.
Debbie Hinkle was in the room.
She was right in front of Peggy Trent. Yeah. And she kept saying, the mother said blah, blah. And I keep going back to the mother. And so we just want to like express a lot of like compassion and empathy for Deb and what she's going through right now and being treated that way in a public forum by a public official felt really shitty. And I just want to say to Peggy Trent, like, don't be talking down to activated community organizers. This is not the way to have this go well in the future. If you actually want to have the community having any kind of trust in you at all, that kind of behavior was really super counterproductive. She also was like said a number of times that whether Derek Colling stays on the streets or not in Albany County was like not her department. And what she was referring to is that like personnel issues are definitely in Sheriff O'Malley's lap at this point. And that may be true that that's not her department, but it also completely misses the fact that she could have acted in a more proactive way protecting the community, and that she has chosen not to do that in a number of different ways. And so I get it that Sheriff O'Malley has a role in all this stuff too, but it felt like there was a lot of dodging of her responsibility going on. So the other thing that I want to talk a little bit about is relates to one of my questions that I had for her. And so that question was, what efforts did you make to screen the two expert witnesses that you brought into the grand jury to ensure that neither of them were unfairly biased toward law enforcement? And why were there no expert witnesses around mental health? And she didn't really answer that question, which was pretty frustrating for me. And part of that is because expert witnesses are really influential in court proceedings. That's why we have them. That's why we bring them in. And so it really matters who those people are and what kind of perspectives they're coming from. And basically what she said was that I asked her where she had found these folks. And she said that DCI, which is the state... Division of Criminal Investigations, basically gave her a list of recommended expert witnesses. And then she did a little bit of background digging on them and picked these folks. And so I'm looking at this and I'm going like, so, well, and we've done a little bit of digging into like who the two expert witnesses actually were and what their organizations are about. And so this is Non-Lethal Defense, Inc. of Casper, Wyoming, and the Daigle Law Group of Southington, Connecticut. But if you look at who these folks actually are, so Non-Lethal Defense, Inc. of Casper manufactures things like tasers. And so they're basically in a business relationship with law enforcement in like all over the country. Like they're the second largest manufacturer of this kind of stuff in the state, in the country. And so you can't tell me that they're like unbiased in terms of their relationship with law enforcement. And then it's a little hard to tell, like Daigle Law Group is a little more subtle on their website, but it appears that it was started by an ex-cop and that they basically wander around the country and have the backs of law enforcement in legal cases like this. That appears to be what this legal group is about. And so how is this not the law enforcement industrial complex echo chamber basically having each other's backs? Like these are the people that were brought in as the expert witnesses. And it seems like they've been brought in at the expense of keeping the community safe. And so that's one of the things that I want to say, that like it's pretty clear even without them releasing any information about what happened in the grand jury proceedings, which they can eventually do and may or may not decide to do. It sounded like she was open to releasing that information. But even just knowing what we know about who was brought in as the experts, it doesn't really seem like this was a very even-handed proceeding. The other thing that she told us about the proceeding was that they didn't present anything about Derek Colling's previous record, which seems like that's one of the big factors that is making the community feel really unsafe, is like this man is now officially the second deadliest cop in the United States, and that's saying something because law enforcement in the U.S. is gaining a increasing reputation as being pretty brutal with the communities that they supposedly serve. And there's only one other cop in the country that has more fatal shootings than Derek Colling at this point. And the fact that that was not allowed to be a factor in the proceedings feels pretty off. So that's what I have to say coming out of the press conference yesterday with County Attorney Peggy Trent.
Check our levels here. So we're here with Mike Selmer, who has founded a Wyoming chapter of Extinction Rebellion.
A minute ago, what prompted us to turn the recorder on was that you were talking about the sort of different approaches to climate change stuff that are happening with Wyoming activists, and one of those is Citizens Climate Lobby working on getting carbon fee and dividend bill passed. And you were saying that you had lived in Washington and you had a little bit of skepticism about how purely that bill might make it through the process. I'd love to have you just repeat what you were saying, because that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I believe that all the political solutions that have been proposed, from the cap and trade to the carbon fee and dividend, and even the Green New Deal, are subject to, I don't know if perversion is too strong a word. evolving through the process into something that won't be as beneficial to addressing the serious problem we have mm-hmm. as we would like. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the goals of Extinction Rebellion is not to support any one specific thing. It's to push the powers that be to, number one, address the truth of the of how serious the problem is, and then come up with concrete ways to address it immediately. I think without the pressure of nonviolent civil disobedience, politicians will tend to sit in their hands, delay, and do everything possible to, especially with the funds they receive from the oil lobby, fossil fuel lobby, they will continue to delay as much as possible. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And at this point, any delay is suicidal. The things that attracted me to Extinction Rebellion is some of the first things I saw about it is that we have to go ahead and grieve. We have to go mm-hmm. ahead and accept the fact that we've screwed the planet really bad. There's really nothing we can do to change some of the serious effects that we're already going to face. At that point, the question becomes, well, do we just give up then? Mm-hmm. Or do we really get up our hackles and the nerve to fight to make mm-hmm. it, to keep it from becoming to an extinction level mm-hmm. Problem? Mm-hmm. I came upon it after a significant period, and significant as being intense, not a long period, but probably September or October. Mm-hmm. I spent a significant amount of time reading books and researching, catching up with the climate science, because even though I've always been somewhat liberal and aware of the problem and been what I considered environmentally conscious, mm-hmm. recycle, try not to use too much plastic bags, and all the little steps that a lot of mainstream liberal environmentally conscious people do, I was never very conscious of how serious climate change was. And over that period of time where I spent intensive effort into finding out how bad it was, I came to believe that it was much worse than even the supposed alarmists were saying. As a result, I was pretty depressed. I've got 9 grandkids, and I was seeing that they had absolutely no future. And I found that pretty depressing, and I didn't see any real solutions coming down the pike. I became aware of Extinction Rebellion just shortly before their October 31st action in London. They are a new, pretty new group. There was quite a bit of organizational effort put into, a lot of people think that all of a sudden it just arose spontaneously in London, but there was actually a lot of organizing that was done prior to those actions. They're the only organization that I contacted that didn't immediately start flooding me with requests for money. Their demands are first that the governments of the world, federal, state, and local, recognize that there's a climate crisis, tell the truth about it. When I first started getting interest, when I was first approached them about starting an Extinction Rebellion in Wyoming, there were only 8 chapters in the U.S. Oh. And there wasn't really an Extinction Rebellion U.S. organization at all. Mm-hmm. It was just different people around the country that had contacted the international and started to get things going. Probably 3 weeks ago, there were 11. Nice. Just a few days ago, there were 30. Another thing that Extinction Rebellion stand for is not shaming or blaming the people that have been part of the problem. If people are people willing to act now shouldn't be made to feel like they don't have a moral standing by which to address this issue. Behind this immigration issue, kind of under the surface, is preparation for us becoming an island and keeping out all the people who we've caused
right. Climate migration has become a big thing.
And that's
part of what's happening.
And this
right
notion
now.
Of the building the fortress.
Yeah, which, building the wall, making ourselves a fortress. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is
fuck the rest of the world over, frankly.
Yeah. Exactly.
And then say, well, no, you can't come in. So mm-hmm. I definitely see that in a lot of their Extinction Rebellion's framework. And I think that they do incorporate that and they recognize that. It really is such a well put together platform for those who are attracted to direct action as a means of that. So I know that you're just starting out the group, so you know I'm not going to make you talk about a bunch of things you want to do, but what would you like people to do in Wyoming who are interested in joining the group or talking to you about it?
One of my primary goals is for Wyoming to be an inspiration to the rest of the country. I want people to say, well, if they can do it in Wyoming, they can do it anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And to tell you the truth, the initial response I've received is really good. I mean, we've got 17 people that actually signed up for Extinction Rebellion, you know, either through the website. Or, had an initial meeting and had 9 people, you know, come to the meeting. And
that's really good. It's really good. For Wyoming.
Yeah. Yeah, this was right before Christmas, so we're talking
very
about
cool.
And while I'm encouraged by that, actually getting people to commit to
direct action.
Hey, help me with the art and music portion of it. Help me with the outreach. Help me with let's plan actions. It's been hard to get everybody together yet, and I know I need to be patient.
Well,
but we do have a Facebook page where people can connect with us. That is Extinction Rebellion Wyoming. I don't mind giving out my email address. It's mpsfamily @gmail.com. People can email me.
Great.
I don't regard the people who will be forced to react to our civil disobedience as the enemy. If we do an action in there, I'm not going to look at them as being the enemy. I'm going to look at them as trying to do their job and I'm going to try to make sure that they understand that that we don't want to harm them. We want to help them. We're saving their planet as much as we're saving ours. I want to be part of an organization that is willing to go there. Is willing to put itself on the front line.
The only way to really deal with the urgency of the moment is to really deal with our bodies, right, and not so much just with our words.
In the Citizens Climate Lobby meeting, there was a lady that I spoke to. We were speaking together, and she admitted that she has stopped looking at the statistics and the science that's behind climate change, because she recognizes how serious it is and it depresses her. And she doesn't, I think she also feels like I do, that this is these political solutions that draw this, draw it out, in years and decades to address it are, not enough.
We're Solidarity House on Patreon and Solidarity House Cooperative on Facebook and Twitter.